Well, the sermon title this Sunday is, So What Do We Do? And perhaps it's better to put the emphasis, so what do we do? When we think of a couple of the things that were read for us this morning, we have two views of the future. And we have one from the Old Testament and one from the New Testament. And the one from the Old Testament is very interesting. The book of Ecclesiastes is another one of those books that, oddly enough, was profoundly important in my transition from someone who didn't have anything even remotely resembling a meaningful faith in God into one that does. And not everybody would go to Ecclesiastes for that. For me, it worked. So I've always had a fond set of feelings for the book of Ecclesiastes, challenging as it is, and parts of it are a bit of a challenge, to say the least. But the part that was read for us today is really interesting. And we have this person talking about how meaningless things are in this particular case, work. Many people will tell you work is meaningless in its very nature. I'm not sure I'd believe that, but I know some work certainly is. I've done some that I have no idea what it accomplished even now. But in this particular case, the writer of Ecclesiastes, perhaps it was Solomon, whoever it might be, talked about hating life. And for a particular reason, because the work that is done under the sun was grievous to me. All of it is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. And hated all the things this person had worked for, which is kind of weird. You've put in all this work for something and you hate it. Well, why? Well, in this particular case, because this person is well aware of the fact that we are, in fact, mortal. We won't live forever. And at some point, this person's going to die. And then somebody else is going to get all their stuff. And the person who gets their stuff might be a loser, is what it comes down to me. When I look at it this way, I mean, it's much more flowery than that. And it's much more elegantly put. But that's the issue. You work yourself to the bone, you do all of these things, you get all of these lovely things, and what do? You die, and somebody else gets it, who might be a fool, who might not be wise, who knows what. And some days when you're looking at who your descendants are and some of the choices they're making, you know for sure they're not going to somebody who's wise, which I suspect crossed my own parents' minds at least once or twice. And so we look at this and we say, well, what? It's a pessimistic view of the future. And there's lots of things to be said about pessimism and whether it's good or bad or anything else. But when I look at this, what I see is somebody in despair, not over what is now, not even over what's going to happen to them in the future, but what's going to happen to their stuff after they die. And being pessimistic about stuff when you're not even here, I think is unwise. And so when I look at this and I say, if we want to look at this as a view of the future, I'd say this is probably wrong. Maybe that's a bit cheeky, but I wouldn't recommend looking at the future this way. I think there's some value in thinking through some of these things, and I'd strongly recommend everybody read the book of Ecclesiastes because it's just really great. But in this particular case, that's just not the way we want to run our lives. And so then we look to a different view of the future. In this case, we're going to our gospel lesson, and we have a far more optimistic view, where we have this parable. There's this rich guy, produced a good crop, something all of us have experienced at least once, hopefully more than once, but you have this abundance in your life, whether it's an actual crop, as it is for some of you, or whatever it might be, and you have this abundance of things, and this person's looking and say, well, I don't have room for this. All of my storage units are full. I'm going to have to do something. I know what I'll do. I'll tear them down, build bigger ones, and there, store all my grain and everything else. And then the person says, I'll say to myself, you've got plenty of good things laid up for many years. Take life easy, eat, drink, and be merry. A very optimistic view of the future. Things have been going well because the granaries and the storage units are all full. And there's more. And it's this optimistic view of the future that everything's going to be great. But as it turns out, this is also wrong. And once again, this same, at least there's a certain similarity of the wrongness in that this person hasn't taken into account the fact that they're not going to live forever either. And in the parable, God says, well, what good is this going to do? You're going to die tonight. You're not going to get the benefit of any of this. And so we have two ways to look to the future. And you all know how Seldom, I think there's only two ways of looking at anything. And this is another one of those things. We can look at the future pessimistically. We can look at the future optimistically. There's way more options than that, thank goodness, because both of these are wrong, at least as they are currently done. And they're wrong because they're looking at the wrong thing. Looking at stuff is just a bad idea. And tempting as it is, particularly in our culture, to look at the measure of our value as the measure of our stuff is going to get us in trouble. And it's tempting because we're pushed to it all the time. Every time you turn around, every time you see a billboard, or if you watch television, or you listen to radio ads or anything else, what you're going to hear overwhelmingly is that you are lacking something that will make you better. And the thing that will make you better isn't a quality, it's a physical thing. It's money, it's a car, it's a vacation, it's all of these things. And if we're not careful, because we're inundated with these messages, if we're not careful, without even planning on it, we'll fall into the sense of saying, well, what do I have? And if I have enough, then I'll be okay. The problem is that enough is one of the slipperiest words in the English language. I used to say that my own sort of personal take on enough, I used to use these three little pictures. When I was a kid, enough would have been a dollar a week. Because when I was a kid, I got 50 cents a week, which, believe it or not, this ages me somewhat. 50 cents would get me enough sugar to make me happy for hours and hours. But not as much as I wanted, so I wanted a dollar. Well, then, fast forward a number of years, this is the early 80s, when interest rates were 1,000,000%, I had a job, all these other sorts of things, and, you know, enough would have been $800 a week. Because, interestingly enough, I made about $400 a week then, and it was okay, but it wasn't enough. Fast forward another couple of years, I went to college, where I had no job because I was a full-time student and all that. I remember thinking, you know, 20 bucks a week would be great, because often I had about 10. And you begin to see the pattern. It's pretty obvious. For me, twice as much as whatever I had was enough. But if twice as much as what you have is enough, it's never enough, because the new normal becomes the old normal pretty quick. And suddenly you need more and more and more, because enough is this ever-moving target. So if we're looking for enough stuff, we're in trouble, because it just doesn't seem to satisfy. Very few people, when you talk to them or you hear them talk or anything else, will define their value and their sense of worth in the things that they have. Remember somebody once saying, well, if things are so important, why aren't there trailers behind hearses? There was no trailer behind the hearse when we took Jim out to the cemetery. When we buried my father-in-law, we buried him in a box. And he was in there. And that was about it. Because all the stuff that he'd accumulated through his life, he didn't need anymore. And all the things that gave him actual worth were still there. Because I looked around at the committal service, I looked around at the funeral, and I saw them in the people that were there. Where do we find enough? What do we do when we look to the future, when we look to where we are now and say, what is it that we need? Well, luckily, we aren't left entirely alone. If you take a look at Colossians, lectionary hardly ever works together this nicely, where we get all three of them pulling together and moving in the same direction. But as I was looking at these three, we look at Ecclesiastes and we have somebody who is all wrapped up in the impossibility of controlling their things after they're dead. Because that's really what that comes down to. It's the things that I've worked so hard for aren't going to be used the way I want them to be used when I'm gone. And then we have this rich guy who knows exactly what he wants to do with his stuff. He's not talking about leaving it for somebody else. He's talking about himself. But we don't live forever. And we don't always get to enjoy all of the things that we've worked for. So we flip over to Colossians. Paul writes, since then, You have been raised with Christ. Set your hearts on things above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things above, not on earthly things. Not on earthly things. Where do we set our mind? If the writer of Ecclesiastes, if the preacher could have taken a step back from where they were, and instead of looking at all these things that they'd accomplished, and there appear to be quite a few of them, and instead of looking at who knows what's going to happen with them when they no longer have any control of them, and it instead looked at what they were accomplishing, what they could do, would that have changed the perspective of those few verses in Ecclesiastes? If instead of saying, I looked at all these things that I built and all the places I had and all the resources I have, and I thought, you know, I could do things with these. I could house the poor. I could turn this house I've got that I'm not using into a school to sort of push it into our context a bit more. I could use all this money that I have to bring water to people that don't have it. Would this person still look at their stuff as meaningless and the work that they'd done as meaningless? I don't think so. And if this rich person with all of their resources had, instead of focusing on what will I need to make my life perfect for the endless future, there's no indication in the text that they took into account the fact that we all die ever. If would have looked at that as an opportunity for generosity, for seeing other places that it could be, would that have changed this need to tear down granaries and storage bins and things that were filled already to make more? The story's pretty short. We don't know all that's going on there. But when we think of that person, often that parable is referred to as the parable of the rich fool. Well, why is this rich person a fool? Not because they're rich, that's not the issue. But it's because they don't pay attention to the fact that there are unforeseen things coming. Would we still have a story in there about a rich fool who, when they realized they had more stuff than they had room for, had given it generously to the poor? I don't think that person would be called a fool anymore. And what characterizes these slightly different orientations, I would suggest, is changing where your heart is, where your thoughts are. If you keep your heart firmly set on things not above but right here, you are always going to be zeroing in on the things you can see, the things you can touch, the things you can own, you can possess, whether it's money or actual physical tangible things, cars, buildings, whatever it might be. If you can step back from that and say that I want to focus not just on what I can see, not just on what's here, not just on the stuff I have, but on the larger call upon me to be a generous, gracious person. To be someone who looks at what I have and says, I have enough to give to that person. I have enough to give to that cause. Yes, I could take that money and spend it on myself. There's no end of things I wouldn't mind having, and I suspect that's the case for all of us. As long as I continue printing books, I will never have all the things I want. But do I have all the things I need? That's a completely different question, isn't it? That's another way of looking at enough. Is enough the measure of everything you could possibly want? Or is enough a measure of what you need to be the person that you were called to be and created to be? Is enough having the things that allow you to do those things that you are uniquely qualified to do? It'd be hard for me to say I have enough if I couldn't get here on Sunday, because I think this is part of what I've been called to do. But does enough mean I need to drive a different car every Sunday? No, that's not enough. That's too much. Well, how do we make these decisions? These aren't easy. There's no spreadsheet you can go download somewhere that tells you when you've achieved enough. Well, Paul suggests, set your minds on things above, not on earthly things. And that will give you a bit of a guide. One of the things that I come back to over and over again, when I think about where I want to spend my time and what I want to do, is I look to the people that I have admired over the years, and I'm not talking about sort of fancy, well-known celebrity politicians, whatever, although those people have things to teach me too. I think of the people that I've known at a lower level, a less frenetic level, and I think of people, obviously, these days, most closely at the top of my mind is my father-in-law. And I think of my father-in-law as somebody who left behind not a lot of money, not a lot of stuff, but a legacy of no one knows how many lives he changed. Not because he bought things for people, but because he loved them. And as he was, as he alluded to more than once, he was not someone who was born loving people. We know some of these people who it seems loving others comes easy, and that's wonderful. I wish I was one, but I'm not. I have to work hard at it, and so did Jim. And he was great at it. He was just great at it. And when you talk to anyone who knew him for any length of time, it just comes out how much he loved people. That's a legacy that I would like to live, or that I would like to leave behind, by living a life that's characterized by that rather than, where's that thing that I don't have yet that I need? Or where can I see how many things you have to see if I have more, or if I have less and then I will be somehow diminished? That's a cramped and small life to live. A life that says, I've been put on this earth to make a difference in the lives of human beings, not by creating, or not by sort of pulling onto myself things, but to looking at all of my resources, including those things, and seeing how can I make a difference in the lives of others. That really helps. And what it does is it takes us away from the weird pessimism of Ecclesiastes and the foolish optimism of the gospel story. Because we don't have to be afraid of what people do with our stuff after we're gone if our stuff isn't that important to us. And likewise, we don't have to be afraid that we're going to be cut down in the prime of life without ever accomplishing things, without building and filling all those granaries, if we're doing what we're supposed to do now. So what are we supposed to be doing now? Oh, there's no checklist for that either. But there are indications all through Scripture. The way we decide how we're going to do, or the way we determine what it is we should do today, is by setting our minds on things above, not on the earthly things. And what are the things above? What does God want me to do today? Who are the people that God has placed in my circle today? Not tomorrow, not 10 years from now, certainly not in the past, but today. How can I be loving to people today? Who can I treat well today? Whose life can I make better today? If we can focus on that, I think it'll free us quite nicely from that pessimism and that weird optimism, and instead allow us to live a life that is filled with satisfaction even now. And then we'll realize that it's not just things that make a difference, and really it's never things that make a difference. But if we can focus on those things that do make that difference, by setting our hearts and our minds on things above, we might just see that we have enough. Amen.